Welcome to Harmonious Workplaces, a podcast about corporate culture, organizational change management, and workplace behavior. Harmonious Workplaces was started by independent consultants Rich Cruz, Ben Kleinman, and Cheryl Volpe to explore, challenge, and build on various organizational culture and change management concepts. It's a blend of theory and practice based on their personal and professional experiences working with companies of all sizes across various industries. If you own a business, lead a team, want new ideas about the corporate environment, or just want to listen to a group of consultants talking about how to make work more enjoyable, we invite you to sit back, relax, and dive in with us to Harmonious Workplaces. And welcome back to Harmonious Workplaces. We are in our seventh podcast. And, you know, over the last three episodes, we talked about a lot of tips and the best practices to implement change from the very beginning conceptual stages all the way to the transformation initiative. But, you know, we haven't hit the end part yet. So we're going to talk about that today. Today, I'm joined by Ben Kleinman, as usual. Hi, Ben.
Hello.
And Cheryl Volpe, as usual. How are you doing, Cheryl?
Great. Hello.
Fantastic. And so the themes that we covered in the last few, like we're on part four now of these practical tips.
The practical tips never end. There's just so many that people should be thinking about or could be thinking about.
And we're really just like, you know, this is the top layer, right?
Yeah. This is like the ice shaving on top of your
exactly.
cocktail.
Exactly. So we've talked about clarifying the why, using stories to make that why resonate emotionally and intellectually, being intentional about our messaging and the cadence of check-ins and making sure that we are in a psychological safe environment. And then co-creating the right incentives to help internalize motivational change, right? The motivation to change, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So again, we're today, it's all about, we've got the flywheel going. We've had this change happening for a while now. Now it's got a stick, right?
So yeah, you mentioned flywheel and I immediately think of Stephen Covey and mm-hmm. One of the best books I think I've ever read about anything in life is just his book, Seven Habits of Highly Successful People. And so you think about the flywheel and then you think about sharpening the saw. He calls it sharpening the saw, but keeping that sustainable change in what we're talking about today, it'd be keeping this change sustainable and keeping people just attuned to that. So cannot plug that book highly enough.
Right. He figured out how to sharpen the saw while using it, right? This was the elusive.
Yeah, I just find that my fingers get shorter and shorter when I try to do that.
as long as you're getting where you need to go, Ben.
That's right.
It's a means to an end.
There you go. All right,
well,
cool.
Well, when I think of the flywheel thing, and I don't know if Jim Collins, Good to Great, if he stole it from Covey or if it was, I don't know where it came from. I just remember get the flywheel starting to turn and then you build momentum to get from where you're at right now to where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So
not to get deep and philosophical on us here, but that goes back all the way to like that whole a journey starts with one step kind of mentality. And so you have to just start somewhere. And mm-hmm. I don't know about you guys, but a lot of times when I'm trying to write something or when I'm looking at a series of questions in a list, a lot of times I'll just start in the middle because I can't ever figure out that perfect intro sentence. You know, like it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. I could never think of that right off the bat. So, you know, I'm starting somewhere in the middle where there's like, you know, all kinds of juicy stuff going on. And then I'll go back and do it, but at least I'm starting. Right. And so it's that kind of mentality, just start and get the wheel turning, you know, prod that hamster, get the hamster going. And then you can kind of figure out where you want to direct the hamster wheel.
Right. Right. Well,
yeah. I'm sure there's those. Did you guys learn about a hamster theory in your
out
OD
there?
Classes?
Do not prod hamsters.
42.1% of hamsters do not like to get product. Was there a hamster theory in your OD classes?
I cannot say that there was.
I can confirm. I do not recall that there was.
And we're all thankful for that.
A lot of mice.
Oh, yes. I suppose that's right. There have been experiments there. So,
speaking of theories.
Yeah.
I will look to you guys. Maybe start us off with a little bit of theory around how you keep that change sustained and what some of the theoretical models are. And then we can try to concretize that into some tips and best practices per our theme today.
Sure. Well, last time Cheryl introduced Vroom's expectancy theory. And, you know, I think that that valence part of it, and correct me, Cheryl, if I'm wrong, but I think that reward part really does help to, institute that change a little better than just, oh, hey, we're here, but if there's some reward there, then it chances are we're going to, and even the expected reward, right? We're going to be motivated to continue. But can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. Maybe step back and just give the overview of Vroom and the valence theory.
Oh, yeah.
Since I'm not steeped in that.
Sure. There are three components to it. And the first one is, of course, the expectancy. And that informs the effort that you will put into your work, which will affect directly your performance. Right. Yes.
And Professor, this is the expectancy that I would have as the person, as let's say a employee or a staff member or someone doing something. It's the expectancy that I would have for whatever I would get out of it.
That's right.
Okay. Gotcha. Thank you.
Right. We're motivating the worker, right?
Okay. Employee. Cool.
Right. And then the second component is called instrumentality, according to Vroom. And that is the actual performance part. It's the instrument to the outcome.
Yep.
Right. And then the valence is the third component. And that outcome part from the middle piece carries into the third. And that outcome leads to the reward. And that's how you get the expectancy as a motivation.
Sure.
In the context that we're using it.
And thank you. Really helpful. Before we go even further, does the instrument, the middle part, the instrumentality, does that also, is it mostly focused on whatever skills or tools or abilities I have internally or that I've gained over time? Or does that also include some element of training or upskilling or education or something to help that person grow into a task or become better at a task or learn how to do a new task?
All of it. It's a holistic.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's kind of like very macro.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, I think, looking at some of the models, right? Like in ADCAR, you got the knowledge and the abilities part, right? That's where the training part comes in. And there's other, there are other theories around and models around that. But right, I think that training component needs to happen during that implementation part, like where we're getting the changes done. But we also need to manage performance as we make this culturally, as we move into that last section, right? So mm-hmm. So in the Bridges model, it's the refreeze section, that's Lewin's model is refreeze, right? Lewin's model, the refreeze section of change, institute change, that's Cotter. Reinforcement, that's ADCAR, or normative shaping, that's Landers. What I'm all saying there is this end part where we need to sustain the change, right? We need to have the knowledge, skills, and abilities developed prior to that, but then we need to empower everybody to continue having that change stick. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Sure does. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So if I'm thinking from a personal perspective and maybe a staff member's perspective or an employee perspective, they have to see that if they put in some effort, that A, they can do it, and B, they'll get some kind of outcome that they want, and then they'll get rewarded for that outcome. So maybe I can think about it because I like to go running. If I go running and I put in extra oomph and I get myself to go a little faster, I have to know A, that I can go a little faster without pulling a hamstring, and B, that I'll get the time I want so that I can qualify for a race or get my personal best time for a certain length of distance or whatever. And then I get some reward, like big fat ice cream sundae at the end of it or something like that.
Well, when I run, I use the Strava app. It gives me feedback, right? So sometimes I get these little icons that say, oh, you're a silver medalist in your own competition, basically, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's great. Now I've got to put the gas on a little more to get to gold. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those rewards don't necessarily need to be monetary or anything, but there's some, right. some artifact though, culturally that signifies,
harmonious workplaces, Rich Crew's bobblehead doll.
Oh yes. Oh,
totally
my gosh.
Motivating.
Totally yeah. motivating.
Let's but it do, makes it do it that. Does make me think though that if we look at it from a employer perspective or a leader perspective, that there has to be some sense that people have the ability to want to do the work, that they have the ability to do the work, that they see that they get rewarded for doing the work, and that reward is meaningful for doing the work. And that reward, we call it reward, like, we're talking about mice eating a pellet or whatever, that there's a sense of whether it's financial reward or somebody getting recognized at an internal ceremony or someone just getting a quiet pat on the back, whatever motivates that person. Or maybe if we think about it, if a lot of times I work with teams, and so whatever motivates that team, you can think of it as how do we get that team to work together and motivate that team? Those kinds of things. And, sure. We joke about the Rich Crew's bobblehead doll, but I've seen it where people have some sort of, company artifact, and it's like that. And whoever is like the head winner for that week, the big winner for that week, gets to put it on their desk. And it's like a whole big thing, and be like, I got the Rich Crew's this week. And then there's another competition the next week. And it's amazing how it, people always seem to gravitate towards, we'll just throw money at the problem. Right. And personally, I love that because, I'm an independent consultant. So that's sort of how I make my living. But yeah. In reality, that's not always the best motivator.
That is not always the best motivator. You've touched on so many things. I want to go back to what Rich is saying about that. Feedback. Oh, no.
Way. Down the road.
You brought it perfectly back, because the instant acknowledgement while you're running, Rich, with that app, right? This is a very important part of that sustainability with making change stick. It's that you get instant feedback while you're still running, while you can still do something about achieving that next level. Right. And that plays back into in the team environment as well, individual and team motivation to sustain change and keep pushing forward until it becomes more natural and normal and customary, is that instant acknowledgement. And not just when folks are mastering it or doing it well or affecting change in a positive way or achieving the goals of the implementation, but also that psychological safety of not being afraid to say, I'm not, in this moment, I am not reaching that goal. I'm not going to be able to finish this by the end of today. I did not master the tool. What is my immediate feedback to improve on the thing that I'm not mastering to?
Sure. Or having that psychological safety to say, I'm not going to finish today. Raise your hand. Is there anyone who has a little bandwidth? Can they help me? Can mm-hmm. I get a little bit of help to get this done? Mm-hmm. Or to feel like, you know, I'm gonna not get it done today, but I know I can get it done tomorrow. And is that going to be okay? Can we message that out to our, you know, client or customer or stakeholder or what have you? Sometimes it's fine, sometimes it's not, and then you have to figure that out. You also, Cheryl and Rich, you guys touched on something else that was kind of interesting in that example with the Strava and the silver and the gold medals as you're kind of going. There's an element there of gamification. And, you know, we kind of joke about going for that silver and getting like, hey, Rich, you're doing really well. Keep going. Maybe you can get a little gold star in your app kind of thing. But I wonder, what do you guys see? Do you feel like that's something that's also pretty powerful to motivate people in that kind of gamification way? Or is that something that's still kind of a little bit more theoretical and we still have some work to do to figure out how to put that into practice?
Well, it's interesting. And in Strava, there's actually a phrase that'll show up sometimes that will say, here's what my performance was. Uh-huh. And disclaimer, some may find this demotivating. So it's like, it says it on the app. It says somebody, so like, I'm just shy. It's like that. I'm like that 3 inches from gold, right? You know, like I'm almost there. I didn't make it. And then it literally says, some may find this demotivating. So yeah, I mean, I guess you have to be careful with it, you know, because
it's almost like when they were testing it, it was from a roundtable discussion during assessment, and someone left that in there by accident.
It might be, I don't know, because in my mind, I'm like, well, I wasn't demotivated until you said that.
Now,
yeah, but now, thanks. You mean I could have gone an extra 18 seconds and met my goal for steps or calories or weight lifted or whatever? Yeah,
that is so funny.
So in the workplace, you know. You could have is probably not the best way to.
That's a really good lesson. Like if you're going to motivate people, keep it on the positive and not, oh, you guys were so close to meeting your goal. You almost had your pizza party. Psych.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be an issue.
Don't do it. So I would not be honest if I didn't share quickly as an aside that this language that you're both using between the flywheel and the gamification apply in a sort of a flip side to the profit world that we generally talk about. Mm. Obviously, with my history with MST3K, it was crowdsourced. So the gamification Ivan Asquith was the master in our campaigns that were successful at that. If you can get us to this one more benchmark, we can have a whole new episode, right? And he is famous for it. So that is a challenge for me would be, how can I take that experience and bring it into the environments that we're talking about now? You know, because it is very powerful.
Yeah, it is powerful.
You have to be talking to people who have a passion for the thing, I suppose, in order to be able to implement that gamification, that excitement. If they don't care, it doesn't matter what you're going to offer as a incentive.
Right.
So maybe I've been spoiled with the campaign.
There's some goal setting theory right there, right? Like, I mean, so MST3K specified that goal. By the way, that's Mystery Science Theater 3000. If anybody doesn't know that, but you know, they specified
1% of people have no idea what that is.
yeah, look it up. but you're setting it's goal setting theory, right? You're setting this goal. And if you have the SMART goal, it has to be reached by a certain time, and it's important to somebody, right? That you will, you know, be motivated to do what you can to reach that goal. If you find that there's, you know, purpose and value to that, and that's one of the reasons why it's recommended to have people that, you know, workers, employees to be part of the goal setting piece, right? Because when they set their own goals, they're motivated to do that. And then they'll want to set higher goals. And that's kind of that grit and growth mindset type of
theories
too. Yeah.
So there's I love that, the co-creation bit. And then there's also, it sounds like for what you're saying, Charles, that there's a goal and that maybe there's tiers or levels of goals.
Yes.
Just like in maybe, Rich, in your Strava app, where there's different levels of bronze, silver, gold medallions that you get. I'm guessing then that also you'd see, like, if we raise X amount, we could have one episode. If we raise 2X amount, we could have 3 episodes or whatever that calculation is. So there's sort of a step up type of thing in terms of your goals.
Yeah.
And your outcomes.
I've used a little of that in some of, like, when I'm doing a CRM implementation, I'm bringing everybody in there, right? Where, well, if we hit, you know, if we get it done by this time, you know, by this date, you know, we'll have, you know, I'll take everybody out for, you know, lunch or something like that. You know, if we hit this, maybe you get to pick a day off or something like that. But I mean, I'm just kind of spitballing here, but I mean, yeah. Literally those are some examples of things that, you know, rewards that we've leveraged before, you know?
Yeah, that's great. So if we think about sustaining a change and making that change stick, part of it is making sure that we continue to rethink these types of incentives and rethink what's going to be motivating to people in the moment and what's going to be something that they can kind of co-create as things evolve, because teams will change, people will change. What motivates me on one day might be different from what motivates me on a different day, or, you know, different phases of your career, that kind of thing. So there's got to be some flexibility and adaptability in terms of that co-creation, that sustainable, you know, how you sustain motivation is probably a whole separate theory and episode, and you know, people could probably do degrees in that ad nauseum. Sure. But it seems like that's sort of that key part of it, is that you have to figure out how to do that in a ongoing way and being open-minded about the types of rewards or incentives and recognitions that you might give that might continue to motivate people. Seems like that's part of it. But then there's also the goal setting and the continuous adjustment of what those goals might be.
Sure. Well, and if take a step back into the process part, not we're not in the freezing or refreezing part yet. We're back in the training and development part, right? So we're training employees, but I think we also need to keep in mind that we need to train the managers on how they are monitoring and controlling what's going on. So, you know, they're monitoring the data, there are the behaviors, they're making sure the data is being logged and collecting feedback. And frankly, they're probably the ones who are going to be distributing the rewards, which makes sense because they're the ones who have that interpersonal relationship. But, you know, that there's a whole other thing about, you know, the manager, your manager probably has more of an effect on you than your spouse, you know, because you spend more time with them oftentimes, you know. So bottom line is there's training, I think, that really, you know, specific training that needs to happen on the manager side. And if that manager is even, you know, an executive, they still need to be trained as to how that works so that they can help to keep the change sustained. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, yeah.
Absolutely. And
super necessary.
Yeah, for sure.
But you think about it too, that in the same way that your staff have to be continuously re-motivated and re-incentivized and re-recognized over time, your managers, your leaders also need something. I mean, it's hard for everyone to keep changing and adapting, and how you do that at a staff level and a team level and also at a leadership level. Those might be similar concepts, but they're probably implemented slightly differently.
Sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we talked before about involving employees and keeping them in the loop and all of that, right? But that is also hugely responsible. You know, we've gone through all these steps of setting up communication structures, feedback structures, and all that stuff, right? So in my opinion, you know, that's a lot of infrastructure that we've built during this change process. We want to keep that feedback loop going, right? I mean, that's the big part of keeping that change going too, right? So those performance evaluations and stuff like that come from this open line of communication, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And also keeping our roles defined so that, you know, if there's someone who is especially adept at the new process or whatever it is, that they're not getting too many other responsibilities or having to lead the whole team just because everyone is so busy. We've got to, you know, sharpen the saw while we're using it. Keeping an eye on how much is on everyone's plate. How's everybody doing, you know, not just evaluating their performance, but checking in with them to say, you know, do you feel as though your role has changed? Are you taking on more responsibility for which you should be rewarded because you just happen to be a person who adapted very well to this? Maybe you're gaining other sorts of promotions or responsibilities. Maybe you don't want all of the responsibilities that you've happened to gain now because you adapted especially well to this change.
Sure.
So keeping an eye on the performance evaluations or evaluating performance is one thing, but also keeping that door open. And it's just another way of saying something that we've been saying, that open communication, that psychological safety, checking in on people and not just setting it and forgetting it, because that is about the worst thing you can do after you implement change is just think, well, my job is done now. Everyone should be off and running. And maybe that's the case. Maybe that's exactly what happens. And you are in a great position to bring more change, set another goal as a leader, but making sure that everyone has gotten on the train and is okay with where they're sitting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
I like window seats.
Do you not like window seats on the train?
No, I was going to say I like the aisle seat because I could get up and go to the bathroom easier. But
I'm with you on the airplane.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm there now too. Isn't it funny? Over time, never thought we'd get tired of looking at that little circle.
That's right.
So do we feel like there is a section of change management that we still have to develop? Or are we feeling like we're getting pretty much to a pretty good soup to nuts view on this?
Well, what are we missing? What are we missing in this keeping things sustained?
I think a lot of it we've touched on is just this idea of constant communication, constant nurturing of that culture of safety, psychological safety, constant nurturing of that open lines of communication, constant nurturing of that mindset that it's okay to recognize people for doing something well, even if it's a small recognition, even if it's not monetary, even if it's just a pat on the back, nice job, way to, you know, do a good job, do right by our customer, whatever that is, in addition to bigger, fancier recognitions and things like that.
And if it can't be constant, Ben, that isn't always practical. As we know, production must go on. Things happen that keep us completely tied to our desks or into our computers, and we can't think about that, especially as leaders in a position of trying to innovate and grow a company. So even if it's quarterly, right, you know, we might not have a meeting about this again, but we're going to have one, you know, the first week of every quarter. Mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then at least there is some kind of touch base. And then leaders, they have to stick to it. They can't say, we missed our deadline and now we need this time to do it. You can't plow through those promises.
No, there has to be some intentionality there. And a lot of it just comes down to recognizing that the cultural component, the behavioral component, the people component is as important as getting the widgets made on the factory floor component. And, you know, shipping stuff out the door, it only happens at its best when you have your people and your culture and your behaviors sorted out and maintained. It's just that, you know, where you think of fine-tuning a machine that makes something or fixing a machine, you just kind of keep it oiled and it'll just keep churning out your widget. The fun stuff about working with people is that that's not quite as simple. And so it's a lot more dynamic and you just have to keep at it in a different way than you would, you know, tuning up your car or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this plays into the piece you recently posted, Rich, that you wrote about, you know, let's embrace AI, but we can't take the people out of it. And it's what Ben is saying is a huge component to that.
Yep. Yep. Well, it's the people that are going to create the culture and keep the culture going, right? And you know, if we maintain that supportive culture, then the change is more apt to stick if you're going to leave it up to the robots to do. I don't know about that.
I would love to have a robot do my dishes and fold my laundry.
Well, there's a cultural change that I can stand behind.
I am fully on board with that sort of Jetsons style robot.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Sign me up.
Hey, man, mm-hmm. we got a Roomba that goes around this house. You know, I would never have thought I would. That's there's the little Rosie right there. I bet my wife might have even named her Rosie. I don't remember, but we're getting there. Nice. But in the workplace, it's all about the people. So,
cool.
All right. Well, I think
well done. This was quite the journey.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Took us four episodes, but we got there. And there's maybe so much more.
Yes. Maybe on our transcript or on our website, we can summarize some of our key takeaways. We can create a list of the various theories that you guys have referenced and pointed to, and just kind of try to encapsulate all this in some way, shape, or form.
Yep. We'll be adding this. So you can find this, all of our previous episodes too, at Harmonious Workplaces at harmoniousworkplaces.com. We will be posting some additional content and making some of these transcripts available on the blog and all that. So yeah. Stay tuned. We'll have more information and
maybe we can even we can call out people who point out things that we've missed or have suggestions or give us best practices. You know, we can recognize them with Rich Cruz bobblehead doll.
Yeah, especially things that we got blatantly wrong. I would love to correct those.
For sure.
For sure.
Yep. Cool.
Absolutely.
Thank you both.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us again this week. Tune in next time. We'll have more things to talk about regarding everything having to do with change in organizations. This has been the Harmonious Workplaces podcast. We'll see you soon. Thanks.
See you. Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Harmonious Workplaces. You can find Harmonious Workplaces on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and other streaming platforms. We'd love any feedback on whatever channel you find us on. Please rate, like, and share our podcast with your network, and remember to add Harmonious Workplaces to your list of favorites to get notified about each new episode. To contact Rich or Cheryl, please visit www.workbalanceconsulting.com. To connect with Ben, find him on LinkedIn, or visit at www.harborsidestrategy.com.